door shut behind them.
What do we have in here?
Bobblewort said. He took the twins' bags to a table on the side of the room and dumped all their belongings out onto it. Stay out of there, Alex said as she watched helplessly. There, for the entire room to see, was the glass slipper, the lock of hair, the chunk of basket, the map, the journal, the dagger, their stack of gold coins, and everything else the twins had been carrying. Thankfully, the troll and goblin only seemed interested in the dagger and the stack of gold coins. They took those with them and dumped everything else in a pile of waste on the side of the table.
Rest up! You'll have a long day tomorrow,
Bubblewort said, and then shared a laugh with Acorn and left the room with their cart. All the other slaves stared at Alex and Connor through their cell bars. They had sympathy in their eyes, so sorry that the twins were about to experience everything they had endured for however long they had been there. Does anyone know how to get out of here? Alex asked, but none of them responded, as if they had been trained not to speak. Even the children were silent. How is this happening? Connor grunted. He violently shook the bars of the cell, but they didn't budge.
That's no use, said a voice behind the twins. Those bars are made out of pure stone.
Alex and Connor turned to face the prisoner occupying the cell next to theirs. Crouched over in the darkest corner of his cell was an old man. He was thin and had a long gray beard and tattered clothing.
There's gotta be some way out of here, Connor said.
I've heard every man and woman say that when they were first brought here, the old man said. But sadly, there isn't.
How long have you been here? Alex asked him.
Years, the man said.
He leaned forward and the light fell on his face. His face was as tired and ragged as his clothes. He had a wandering eye, so the twins couldn't tell which of them he was speaking to.
Say, don't I know you two from somewhere? He asked.
The twins knew this wasn't possible, but the man seemed convinced, and, for whatever reason, the man seemed oddly familiar to them, too.
I don't believe so, Alex said. We're rather new to the area.
I could swear it, the old man said. Are you sure I never traded you a magic flute for a chicken, or perhaps a singing flower for a lamb?
No, I'm sorry, we've never traded anything with you before, Alex said.
And then she realized who he was. The wandering eye, the long beard, the raggedy clothing.
Could it be? She pulled Connor aside. Connor! He's the traveling tradesman! The one from the journal!
Connor couldn't believe it.
Are you sure?
He asked.
Sir, said Alex, kneeling down to him, are you by chance known as the traveling tradesman?
The man had to think about it. Obviously, the years of enslavement had taken their toll on his mind.
Yes, I believe that is what they called me, he said.
He was happy to be reminded of a time when he wasn't a slave. The twins were so pleased to hear this.
Ask him if he knows what happened to the man who wrote the journal,
Connor whispered into Alex's ear, and she nodded.
Mr. Tradesman, Alex said, do you remember a man coming to you and asking about the wishing spell?
The wishing spell?
The tradesman asked. At first, it seemed he had no idea what she was talking about, but then recognition dawned on his face.
Why, yes, I do. He was one of the last customers I did business with before I was brought here. Silly lad. He talked about wanting to travel into another world, and I thought I was mad.
Did he ever make it? Alex asked. Did he find all the items of the wishing spell?
I don't know,
the tradesman said, and the twins slumped.
I never saw him again, so it's possible.
He looked up at them curiously.
Why do you ask?
The twins looked to each other. They didn't know what to tell him.
Don't tell me you two are chasing after the wishing spell, too, he asked.
They looked at each other guiltily. Connor leaned down next to Alex and began asking questions of his own.
We're trying, but we don't know everything we're looking for, Connor said.
The tradesman laughed.
No one does. That's the beauty of it. Some people know the descriptions of the items it requires, but no one knows what they are for sure.
Like Hagatha, Alex said. She only knew what the riddles were. The man she told them to had to figure out what they were on his own, but he could have been wrong.
What if we found Hagatha and asked her for her opinion? Connor began. Hagatha is dead,
the tradesman said.
Dead? Alex gasped. How did she die?
She fell into the Thornbush Pit, the tradesman said.
What is the Thornbush Pit? Alex asked.
Good heavens, child, are you daft? After the curse was broken on the Sleeping Kingdom, all the thornbush and shrubbery that had grown wild around the kingdom was cleared out and dumped into a large and deep pit, the tradesman said. Hagatha was collecting some of the thornbush for her home and fell in.
That's awful, Alex said.
She called for help for days, but no one would help her. No one wanted to help an old hag, the tradesman said. Just before she died, Hagatha cursed the thornbush so that it would grow onto anything or anyone near it and pull it straight to the bottom, where she was trapped forever.
That's intense, Connor said.
Since then, however, it's been used as a wasteland. People from all over the kingdoms journey there to drop off anything they never want to see again, he said.
I wonder if there's anyone else we could speak to, Alex said.
Whatever journey you were on, I'm afraid it's over, the tradesman said. Once you're here, and there's nothing you can do about it.
He turned away from them. A commotion came from up the tunnel leading into the dungeon. Trolls and goblins led the men and women who had been serving in the tunnels and the common room back into their cells. They all looked as if they could sleep for a year, if permitted.
Time for sleep,
a troll ordered, and then extinguished all the torches in the room with a bucket of water.
And if anyone makes a sound, no one will be fed tomorrow.
The trolls and goblins left the dungeon, chuckling. The room was pitch black. Alex found Connor in the darkness, and they rested beside each other.
I just don't want Mom to worry, Alex said with big teary eyes. The longer we're here, the longer she's going to be alone.
I'm sure Grandma's with her, Connor said. They probably have the entire police department out looking for us. It'll be an interesting conversation once we get home and tell them where we've been all this time.
Thanks for being positive, Connor, Alex said.
Despite the little comfort her brother gave her, Alex cried herself to sleep. Connor couldn't sleep. He couldn't stop thinking that, just a week before, he had been safe and sound in his own bed, fearing nothing but schoolwork and Mrs. Peters. And now, here he was, in the dungeons of another dimension, facing a life of slavery. How quickly times had changed. Connor had just dozed off when he suddenly awoke. He felt like someone was watching him. He opened one eye and saw, standing on the other side of the cell door, holding a single candle, the troll girl they had seen in the common room. She had been watching him sleep.
"Can I help you?" asked Connor, very creeped out.
"What's your name?"
the troll girl asked him in an airy and engaging voice.
"Why do you want to know?" he asked.
"Because I'd like to know everything about you," she said, with a dreamy smile that made Connor feel sick.
"I'm Connor. Who are you?" he asked.
"My name's Trollbella," she said. "I'm a troll princess. My father's the troll king. Do you have a girlfriend, Connor?"
Oh no, Connor thought. She had a crush on him. He was suddenly so grateful for the bars between them.
Can't say that I do, Connor said awkwardly. It's hard to meet people after having been recently enslaved by trolls and goblins.
Oh, I know, Trollbella said, with big flirty eyes. Trolls and goblins are the worst. I hate living here. I would move away if I could. Everything is so unorganized, and everyone is so mean. And don't get me started on troll boys. They don't know how to treat a lady.
I'm sorry to hear that, Connor said, hoping a goblin would walk in and take him away to work in a tunnel and save him from the situation.
I'm just a hopeless romantic myself, Trollbella said,
batting her eyelashes and twirling one of her pigtails.
Can I call you Butterboy?
Definitely not, Connor said.
Connor, what's going on?
Asked Alex, waking up.
Who is she?
Trollbella asked. Her playful expression fell into a threatened frown.
Relax, this is just my sister, Connor said.
Hi,
said Alex, very confused by what was happening.
I don't like her, Trollbella said, pointing at Alex.
Alex was taken back. Had she done something wrong?
She grows on you, Connor said. And if I had to be enslaved for life with someone, I'm glad it's her.
Have you enjoyed your stay with us so far?
Trobella asked. Not really, Connor said. Was she kidding or just stupid?
We'd really like to get out of here if you could help us, Alex said. I'm not talking to you,
Trobella yelled at Alex. She then turned her head slowly and smiled at Connor.
I may be able to give you freedom in exchange for something else.
What's that? Connor said. Both of the twins would have been on the edge of their seats if they weren't on a dirty dungeon floor.
A kiss,
Trollbella said, staring passionately at Connor. Connor gulped. Well, I guess we're going to be slaves forever. Trollbella frowned. Alex hit Connor upside the head.
Kiss her, you idiot, and then we'll get out of here,
Alex said.
Don't hit my butter boy,
Trollbella said.
And I never said I would let you go. I only said I'll let him go.
I think he'd be more inclined if you promised to let both of us go, Alex said.
No, I wouldn't. Please don't speak on my behalf, Connor chimed in, but neither of them was listening to him. Trollbella's nostrils flared up. She didn't like negotiating. She turned around and disappeared without saying a word.
Way to go, Connor, Alex said. That may have been our only chance to escape.
There's no way I'm kissing that, Connor said. Freedom or no freedom, you're asking way too much of me. The twins both jumped back from the cell door. Trollbella had quickly returned with a key. She was ready to make a deal.
Pucker up, butter boy,
Trollbella said, and pushed her head up against the bars of the cell door. I can't do this. I physically can't do this, Connor said.
Do you ever want to see home again? Alex asked him.
Connor looked as if he were about to vomit and cry at the same time. At a snail's pace, he approached Trollbella with his lips extended. He wasn't going fast enough for Alex, so she pushed him toward the cell door, and Trollbella grabbed hold of him through the bars. She planted a big, fat, juicy kiss on him.
Bleh!
Connor said, breaking away from her. He was wiping his mouth manically and gasping for air. Trollbella had a huge, satisfied grin on her face.
That was the worst thing you have ever done to me, Connor said, pointing at Alex, feeling completely betrayed. How could you?
All right, Trollbella, said Alex, ignoring her brother's dramatics. A deal's a deal. Let us go.
Trollbella's smile dropped into a scowl. She reluctantly unlocked the cell door and opened it. And as she did, Alex caught sight of the other slaves in the dungeon. The few that were awake had been silently and intently staring at the twins. They had never seen anyone be freed before. They hadn't thought it was possible.
You're free to go, Trollbella said.
The twins briskly walked out of the cell, but as Alex passed Trollbella, she swiftly grabbed the key and pushed the troll princess into the cell, slamming the door behind her.
Let me out of here right now, Trollbella screamed. This wasn't part of the deal.
I can't leave without the others, Alex said.
She ran around unlocking the doors on all the cells.
Everyone wake up! We're getting out of here! Come on!
She ran over to the pile of waste on the other side of the room and retrieved all their things.
Guards!
Trollbella howled.
Guards! The slaves are escaping!
Trollbella,
Connor said,
please be quiet. Would you do that? Please? For your butter boy?
Trollbella blushed.
All right, butter boy. For you, I'll be quiet.
The slaves all stirred to life. It took them a moment to understand what Alex was saying. They had dreamed about this day for so long. Many eagerly jumped up and left their cells, but others hesitated, including the traveling tradesmen.
Come on, Alex said. What are you waiting for?
Are you too mad? They'll skin us alive if we try to escape, the tradesman said. This worried some of the others, especially the children.
Would you rather die in your cell or die trying to get back the life they stole from you?
Alex said. Alex's words must have inspired them, because they all gathered around her. Even the tradesman was willing to take a chance for freedom. He nodded at Alex as he joined the group.
Does anyone know the best way out of here?
Alex asked.
We need to get to the tunnels,
a man said.
Yes, the tunnels,
a woman agreed.
How do we get there? Connor asked.
We'll go up to the common room and pass the stone arch. The trolls and goblins have built tunnels leading to every kingdom. That's how they get around, the tradesman said.
Do we need to worry about anyone catching us? Connor asked.
They're all asleep by now, Trollbella said with a sigh from her cell. Even the guards. That's why no one came when I called.
All right, let's go, Alex said. Everyone be as quiet as possible and help the older and younger ones in the group. Everyone nodded, and Alex led the way out of the dungeon, praying it would be the last time any of them were ever in this room again.
Until we meet again, Butterboy,
Trollbella said, and blew Connor a kiss.
Whatever,
Connor said, and then followed the others out of the dungeon. Trollbella smiled from horn to horn. This had been the most exciting day of her entire life. The group of escapees traveled up the tunnel to the common room and snuck past a line of goblin guards. Just as Trollbella had said, they were asleep while standing guard. They finally reached the common room and covered their mouths in horror at what they saw. All the trolls and goblins that Alex and Connor had seen carousing on the way in were spread across the floor, passed out. How were they going to get to the other side of the room without stepping on one of them? Some were snoring, others twitched in their sleep. Even the Troll King and the Goblin King were sleeping in their thrones. You could barely see the floor between the unconscious monsters sprawled across the room.
Quickly and quietly, Alex whispered to the group. We can do this. Just be as careful as possible.
They began tiptoeing around the sleeping creatures. Carefully, they put their feet between the monster's spread-out limbs, between the broken plates and goblets across the dirt floor, and between the knocked-over chairs and tables. Every time a troll or goblin made any noise or movement, everyone froze. Their heart stopped for a moment. If any of the monsters were to wake up and see their slaves walking through the room toward the exit, it would be a disaster. They were almost at the stone tunnel. Alex stopped in the middle of the room and made sure everyone passed her safely and that no one was left behind. Eventually, everyone had made it except her brother, who remained very still in the back of the room. He was staring at the Troll King and the Goblin King with wide eyes and an open mouth.
Connor, what are you doing?
Alex asked in her loudest whisper.
Look,
he mouthed, only a little whisper coming out.
Look at the crown. It's the crown.
Alex looked up at the stone crown above the Troll King and Goblin King's heads.
What about it?
Alex whispered.
It's the crown for the wishing spell,
Connor said.
A stony crown that's made to share, found deep within a savage lair.
Alex could feel her heart beating in her throat. Connor was right. It fit the description perfectly.
What are you two doing? We're waiting for you,
the tradesman said from the stone tunnel. Alex and Connor looked at each other. They knew they couldn't leave without the crown.
Go ahead without us,
Alex said.
Suit yourselves,
the tradesman said, and then left with the others down the stone tunnel.
I'm going to get it,
Connor whispered to Alex.
Be careful,
Alex said. Connor slowly moved through the room. He accidentally kicked a goblet, and it made a loud ding, causing a few of the trolls and goblins to twitch in their sleep.
Sorry,
Connor mouthed to Alex. He climbed up onto the throne platform. The crown was pretty high up. He would have to climb up onto the thrones to get it. He climbed onto the armrest of the Troll King's throne. His left leg was so close to the king's face that Connor could feel the king's warm breath through his jeans. Connor swung his right leg onto the armrest of the Goblin King's throne and reached up for the crown. It was still too high. He would have to jump for it. Alex had to cover her eyes. Her hands were trembling. Connor jumped and tried to grab the crown, but he was just a few inches too short. He jumped again. The tips of his fingers touched it this time. He jumped once more. This time, the highest jump yet, and grabbed it. Unfortunately, on his way down, he missed the armrest and landed right in the lap of the Goblin King.
Ah!
The Goblin King screamed. Alex took her hands from her face just in time to see her terrified brother sprawled across the Goblin King's lap. With the crown held tightly in his hands, Connor jumped up and ran as fast as he could, grabbing his sister's arm on the way toward the exit.
After them!
The Goblin King ordered.
Someone grab them!
The entire room of trolls and goblins began waking up to the Goblin King's yells. Alex and Connor weren't careful about what or who they stepped on. They ran straight through the common room and down the tunnel of stones. Dozens of trolls and goblins chased after them. The twins ran past the two horrible statues at the tunnel's entrance. The goblin statue suddenly crashed to the ground just as they passed it, blocking the tunnel. Alex screamed. Had they been a second later, it would have fallen on them. They turned to see the tradesman, out of breath and holding his heart. He had just knocked over the statue and blocked the tunnel. The trolls and goblins had reached the end of the tunnel and were struggling to get past the fallen statue.
"That should keep them busy for a while," the tradesman said. "Now run!"
"Where's everyone else?" Alex asked.
"They fled to the tunnels. They're safe," he said.
"What about you?" Alex asked.
"I couldn't leave without you," the tradesman said. "I'm old, children. I'd never outrun them anyway. You two still have a lot of living to do, so run before they get past the statue. Hurry!"
"We're not leaving without you," Alex said.
"I'm wanted in every kingdom," the tradesman said between deep breaths. "No matter where I go, I'll end up behind bars. I've done a lot of bad things in my day, children. I've made a lot of trades and deals that I shouldn't have. I deserve this. You don't. Now run."
Alex's and Connor's feet moved before their minds could decide whether to stay any longer. They ran ahead and found a series of tunnels leading in different directions. Each had a sign above the entrance that said where the tunnel led to.
"Come on,"
Alex said, and grabbed Connor's arm, pulling him into the tunnel that said Fairy Kingdom above it. They tucked the troll and goblin crown safely away in Alex's bag.
"Did we do the right thing?"
Alex asked Connor as they ran down the tunnel.
"Should we have left him?"
"He wasn't going to come with us. His mind was made up," Connor said.
He knew they had done everything they could, but he still felt guilty too.
"How could a stranger give up so much for us?" Alex said.
"Maybe he thought trading his freedom for ours would be the only honest trade he'd ever make," Connor said.
Chapter 12, The Fairy Kingdom. Alex and Connor emerged from underground between a tree and a rock. They were covered in dirt and cobwebs and were breathing hard and sweating profusely. It had been so stuffy in the tunnel.
"We made it," Alex said. "We're at the surface."
"I never thought I'd be so happy to see the sun and the sky," Connor said.
It was sometime around noon, and the twins had found themselves on a pleasant, grassy field next to a perfectly groomed path.
"Is that the path we should have taken after the Red Riding Hood Kingdom?" Connor asked.
"Yep,"
Alex said, looking down at the map.
"But think of all the fun we would have missed out on."
They shared a laugh. The twins brushed themselves off and headed down the path. They felt very safe in this place. All the trees and fields were perfectly manicured and inviting. Then again, anything would have seemed inviting after narrowly escaping a lifetime of slavery for trolls and goblins.
"Are we positive that we're in the Fairy Kingdom?" Connor said, looking around.
"I'd say it's very possible," Alex said, but she wasn't looking down at the map.
"How do you figure?" Connor asked her.
"Well,
that's an indication," Alex said, and pointed.
Grazing around a perfect little stream ahead of them, to their amazement, was a herd of unicorns. They were beautiful, white with silver horns, silver hooves, and silver manes. Connor's forehead wrinkled and his mouth dropped open.
"Oh, jeez," he said. "That is the most obnoxious thing I have ever seen in my life."
"I want to pet one,"
Alex said, and ran toward them.
"Alex, be careful," Connor said. "They could have rabies."
"Unicorns don't have rabies, Connor," Alex said.
"You don't know where those horns have been," Connor called out.
Alex walked up to the herd, slowing her pace so she wouldn't spook them. They were so majestic and graceful, she had to stop and admire them for a moment. One saw her and walked toward her. Any sane person would have been scared by a wild animal approaching them, but Alex wasn't. For whatever reason, she knew the unicorn wasn't going to harm her. It lowered its head, and she petted its face. Connor walked up and stood just behind her. All the other unicorns slowly surrounded them.
"Alex," Connor said, "this is making me incredibly nervous."
The unicorns formed a perfect circle around the twins and bowed to them. Alex smiled from ear to ear. Connor raised a suspicious eyebrow.
"This is trippy," he said.
"Maybe they're welcoming us into their kingdom," Alex said.
The unicorn stood still, as if frozen, and didn't show any sign of moving. Connor grabbed Alex's hand, and they left the circle and rejoined the path. The stream traveled beside the path as the twins traveled down it.
"Is it just me, or is that water sparkling?" Connor asked.
He was right. The farther they walked along the stream, the more it appeared to glow and shimmer.
That must mean we're getting close, Alex said happily. That's Thumbelina Stream. It should take us straight into the Fairy Kingdom.
I say we grab hold of the first fairy we find and call her names, like Oversized Insect or Fish Bait, until she cries, Connor said. That's how we'll get the tears.
No, we should come up with a really sad story to tell, Alex said, and then a thought occurred to her. How are we going to collect the tears once they've been shed?
Connor shrugged. Maybe we'll have to kidnap a fairy and keep her around until we need her to cry. What does the journal say to do?
Alex opened the journal and found the section about the Fairy Kingdom.
Acquiring a fairy tear is not an easy task.
Surprise, surprise, Connor said.
Since fairies for the most part are very happy beings, it will be very hard to find one so overcome with grief that it is brought to tears. However you manage, hopefully under moral conditions, you can use the vial hidden inside this journal's spine to contain the tear.
Alex turned the book on its side and looked closely through the hole where the pages were connected to the spine. Deep inside the journal spine was a small glass vial with a cork stopper.
Look at this, Alex said, pulling the vial out of the spine. It says to put the tear in this vial.
Great. Now all we need is an emotional fairy, Connor said.
Alex stopped walking. Do you hear that? She said. Tiny sniffling sounds came from close by. The twins looked around, but couldn't see quite where they were coming from.
What is that? Connor asked.
He looked down beside him and had to blink a few times to make sure he wasn't imagining what he saw.
No, this can't be real. This is too easy. Nothing has been this easy.
What are you talking about?
Alex asked him. Connor turned her shoulders to face what he was looking at.
Sitting on a rock on the side of the path was a fairy, and she was crying.
She was only a few inches tall and had big, blue wings similar to a butterfly's. She had dark hair and a purple dress made of leaves and shoes made out of flower buds. Her tiny hands were clasped around her big eyes, and tears were running down her face. The twins just stood there and stared down at her. They were afraid their minds were playing tricks on them. They both wanted to see this so badly.
What are you looking at? The fairy said to the twins in a tiny, high-pitched voice.
We're sorry, Alex said.
Why are you crying?
Connor jerked his head toward his sister, and she knew what he was thinking. Who cares? Get a tear.
That's none of your business, the fairy said, and sobbed some more.
Forgive me, Alex said. I can tell you're upset about something, and I wouldn't be myself if I didn't ask if there's anything I could do to help you.
That's sweet. Thank you,
the fairy said, changing her attitude.
I'm just having a very rough day, that's all.
Connor kept trying to grab the vial from his sister's hand, but she wouldn't let him take it.
What's your name?
Alex asked the fairy.
Trix,
the fairy said.
Hello, Trix. My name is Alex, and this is my brother, Connor, Alex said. Would you like to talk about what's troubling you?
Connor was shocked. She was actually more interested in helping this fairy than collecting one of her tears.
My trial's in a few minutes and I'm scared, Trix said.
Your trial? Connor asked. Did you kill somebody?
Of course not, said Trix. I used magic on another fairy, and now the fairy council may ban me from the fairy kingdom.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Alex said.
What did you do to the other fairy? Connor asked.
I turned his wings into prune leaves, the fairy said, and cried some more. It was only for a moment. I turned them back, but he was provoking me. He kept teasing me about my size.
They're going to ban you from the entire kingdom just for turning someone's wings into leaves for a couple seconds? Connor asked.
They've been very strict ever since that enchantress put the curse on Sleeping Beauty, Trick said. The Fairy Council believes that every fairy is a representative of their order and should act as such.
Those are high expectations, Alex said.
I can't leave the Fairy Kingdom,
Trix cried.
It would be so lonely, and I hate being alone. I don't have many friends to begin with.
Alex let Trix use the corner of her shirt to dry her tears. Connor turned bright red, watching his sister dispose of the tears so carelessly. He had to make the fairy produce more.
Being banned would really be terrible, though, wouldn't it? Connor said. You'd probably have to live in an old bird nest somewhere in the dwarf forest and be chased by wolves and witches every day, and that's only if an ogre doesn't capture you in a jar and barbecue you first.
Trix started hysterically crying at this.
Connor, what is wrong with you?
Alex yelled. Connor snatched the vial from her hand and collected a tear from Trix's face just as it dripped off her chin. Alex gave him a dirty look.
"Would you like us to go with you to your trial?" asked Alex, leaning down to be eye level with Trix. "For emotional support?"
"Yes, I would like that," Trix said. "That's so kind of you."
"Well, I know what it feels like to think the whole world is against you," Alex said.
"We better get going. I don't want to be late."
Trix flew into the air and fluttered down the path. The twins walked after her.
"Alex, are you crazy?" Connor said. "We've got a tear. Let's get out of here."
"We're the only people in the world who this fairy has," Alex said. "We're going to be good people and help her out." Connor grunted with frustration.
"Helping this fairy isn't going to take away any bad memories you have from school, Alex."
Alex ignored him and followed Trix down the path. Connor followed, sulking the entire way. They traveled deeper into the fairy kingdom. Everything in the distance seemed to sparkle. They thought it was a mirage at first, but the closer they got, they saw that the trees, the grass, and the path all shined and shimmered in the sunlight.
"What's up with all the glitter?" Connor asked.
"I don't think it's glitter. I think it's magic," Alex said.
They reached the heart of the kingdom and were completely bewildered by what they saw. It was like they were standing in a gigantic tropical garden with large, colorful flowers of all shapes and species. There were weeping willows over small ponds and vines that grew across the ground and up the trees. There were beautiful bridges over many streams and ponds. There were fairies everywhere. Many flew around in the air, some just hovered above the ground, and some walked on smaller paths adjacent to the one the twins were on. They were all different shapes and sizes and colors. Some were taller than Alex and Connor, some were as small as Trix, and some didn't even seem to be solid, but rather made from pure light. There were just as many male fairies as there were female. Some of the fairies wore gowns. Others' clothes were made entirely from plant materials, and some wore nothing at all. Many had made miniature homes in the branches of the trees, or in mushrooms on the ground, and there were fairies who even lived underwater with colorful fish. Something about this place made Alex feel as if everything were right in the world. It gave her more hope, excitement, and happiness with every step she took. It was paradise.
"Have you ever seen something so beautiful in your entire life?" Alex asked her brother.
"Not too shabby," Connor said.
"The fairy council operates in the fairy palace. It's just up ahead," Trix said, and gestured the twins to follow her over a pond.
They, of course, took a bridge. They walked toward a palace made entirely out of golden arches and pillars. It was completely open. There were no more than two walls to line each room, and all the windows were tall with no glass. When you lived in a place as beautiful as this, who would want to keep out the environment? Trix took the twins to the center of the palace, into a long room with many seats facing the front.
"This would be the perfect place for a wedding," Alex said.
At the front of the room were seven fairies, Alex and Connor's size. They looked like a living rainbow. Each was dressed in a specific color, and they stood behind podiums positioned over an arch.
"That's the fairy council," Trix said. "That's Rosette, the red fairy, Tangerina, the orange fairy, Xanthus, the yellow fairy, Emeralda, the green fairy, she's mostly in charge, Skylene, the blue fairy, Violetta, the purple fairy, and Coral, the pink fairy."
Rosette was short and plump and had very rosy cheeks. Tangerina was stylish and wore her orange hair in a large beehive with actual bees flying around it. Xanthus was male. He wore a shiny suit and parts of him were ablaze. Emeralda was tall and beautiful. She was black and wore a long emerald dress that matched her eyes and jewelry. Skylene was very pale and had hair the color of the sky and flowing robes the color of the sea. Violetta was the oldest and had grayish-purple hair. Coral was the youngest, no more than a few years older than the twins in appearance, and wore a simple pink dress and had a pair of pink wings on her back. There were two empty seats on either side of the podiums.
"Who sits there?" Alex asked Trix.
"The fairy godmother sits on the left, and Mother Goose sits on the right," Trix said. "They complete the fairy council, although they're rarely here. They're always traveling around the kingdoms helping people."
"Is that you, Trix?" Emeralda asked.
"Yes, I'm here,"
Trix peeped nervously and flew to the front of the podiums.
"You're late. Please come forward," Emeralda said.
She was gracious but authoritative, someone the twins would definitely want in their corner during an altercation.
"Trix, do you know why you've been called before the fairy council?"
Trix shamefully nodded her head.
"Yes, ma'am." Being a fairy requires a strong sense of responsibility, Tangerina said. Responsibility you haven't shown.
Trix nodded some more, her eyes swelling with tears.
I know, she squeaked.
Unfortunately, we can't let your actions go unpunished, Violetta said.
We need to make an example of you to reinforce the number one rule of being a fairy, Rosetta said.
To never, under any circumstance, use your magic harmfully against another person, place, or thing, Xanthus said.
Unfortunately, there's only one thing for us to do, Skylene said. We have to banish you from the fairy kingdom, Coral said.
Trix covered her eyes and wept harder than she had all day.
I understand, she said through her sobs.
Whoa, 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 Connor yelled from the back. Hold on, are you kidding me? He promptly walked to the front of the room and stood next to the spot where Trix was hovering.
Connor,
Alex said, and tried to grab him, but was too late. Are you seriously going to ban her for making one little mistake? Connor asked the council with his hands on his hips. There was whispering and murmuring among them. They were appalled that someone would so openly question their judgment.
Please don't try to help me, Trix whispered to Connor.
Young man, who do you think you are? Xanthus said.
Well, I'm just a kid, but even I can tell you that your ruling is ridiculous, Connor said. They all gasped, except for Emeralda, who kept her calm and imposing demeanor. Alex slapped an open palm against her forehead.
How dare you?
Tangerina said, and the bee swirling around her hair grew mad and flew faster around her head.
You are out of line, Violetta said.
How disrespectful, Coral said. How rude, Skylene said.
Emeralda was the only member of the assembly to remain silent. She studied Connor with her emerald eyes. Silence, Emeralda ordered. She raised a hand, and all her fellow assembly fairies went quiet.
Let the boy speak. I want to hear what he has to say. Go ahead, young man.
Connor wasn't sure if this was a trick or not, but he didn't hold back.
Listen, I'm not a fairy, thank God, and I'm not perfect either. I try to be the best person or the best student possible, but every once in a while I slip up. I forget a homework assignment or I fall asleep in class. My best effort isn't as good as someone else's might be, and no one should have the right to scold or punish me or publicly humiliate me for it, Connor said.
Trix knew what the rules were, and she still committed an offense against one of her peers, Rosette said.
No one can be perfect, Connor said. And from what I hear, the guy had it coming. Where is his trial? Why isn't he here? Why do I always get detention for sleeping when it's ancient Mesopotamia that should be punished for being so boring?
The council continued to be outraged by this outburst. Many members didn't want to tolerate it and tried to leave.
I hear what the child is saying, Emeralda said.
But we can't just pardon Trix. We're the fairy council. It wouldn't send a good message to the rest of the kingdoms, Tangerina said.
Look, Orange Lady, Connor said. In the last week, my sister and I have almost been eaten by a witch, narrowly missed being attacked by a pack of wolves, were almost killed by a possessive bridge troll, survived a burning castle, and barely escaped a life of enslavement in the troll and goblin territory. If you ask me, you've got bigger problems than a fairy turning a jerk's wings into leaves. Looks to me like you busy yourselves with stupid little things so you feel like you're doing something, when in reality, you can't handle what's really going on out there.
The council went silent, and all the members appeared to become very concerned.
Enslavement? Skylene asked. You mean the trolls and goblins are still kidnapping and enslaving people?
Yes, Connor said. There were dozens of us down there. We really could have used your help, but I guess you were too busy slapping fairies' wrists for playing pranks on one another.
Although they held their stoic expressions, the council was secretly ashamed of themselves. Connor was right. They eyed one another for a moment before Emeralda broke the silence.
On behalf of this council, I hereby forgive Trix for her crimes, Emeralda said. Xanthus, Skylene, and Tangerina, I say we pay a visit to the Troll King and the Goblin King immediately. And furthermore, let this be a lesson to all of us.
Xanthus, Skylene, and Tangerina nodded, and then disappeared into thin air with a pop.
Thank you, Mr. Emeralda said.
Wishington, Connor said. Connor Wishington.
Emeralda smiled and then disappeared with the others. Trix flew up to Connor's face and gave him a huge hug.
That "That's the bravest and nicest thing anyone has ever done for me," Trick said.
Connor looked back at his sister. She was beaming with pride. She was so proud of her brother. It was a look Connor rarely got to see.
"You know, helping a fairy isn't going to take away any unhappy memories from school," Alex told him when she joined Connor and Trix near the podiums.
Connor slyly grinned. "I had to say something. I would have regretted it if I hadn't."
The remaining Fairy Council fairies began to leave. Some simply walked off, and others disappeared into thin air, leaving behind sparks or bubbles as they went. Coral was searching the room for something and patted her lap as she went.
"Here, Fisher. Where are you, Fisher?"
Coral said. A fish with four legs ran past Alex and Connor and jumped up into Coral's arms.
"There you are," Coral said. "It's just about time for your lunch."
Alex and Connor looked to each other, confused, each wondering if the other had seen it too.
"Is that what I think it is?" Connor asked.
"I think so," Alex said. Coral was just about to leave when the twins stopped her.
"Excuse me," Alex said. "Where did you get your fish?"
"Oh, Fisher?" Coral said. "I dropped a wand in a lake once and granted him a wish after he swam down and got it for me. He wished for legs, silly thing, so he could play with some boy who lived in a village nearby. The boy ended up dying, sadly, so Fisher came to live with me."
Coral's wings began to flap, and she flew away with her pet fish.
"So that was what we thought it was," Connor said.
"Yes," said Alex, her head spinning with questions. "That was the walking fish from Dad's story."
Chapter 13. A Wolf Pact. There was blood everywhere. White feathers and bits of wood covered the ground. A driver had been transporting a cart full of geese into the Northern Kingdom when the big bad wolf pack attacked. The only thing that remained in one piece was the green, floppy hat the driver had been wearing. The wolves were spread out under the trees, chewing on the bones of their victims. Malumclaw jerked his head up and stared into the trees. Someone was coming. He could smell them. Whoever this person was, their scent made him anxious.
"We've got company," Malumclaw growled.
All the wolves jumped to their feet, ready to attack again if they had to. But they were no match for who was approaching. A dark, hooded figure slowly moved through the trees and up to the wolves. It stood fearlessly in front of them for a moment before unveiling itself.
"Hello, Malumclaw," said the evil queen.
"Who are you?"
Malumclaw barked.
The woman before him, less than half his size, was making the hairs on the back of his neck stand up.
"You don't know me, but you know of me," the evil queen said. "Everyone does."
"It's the evil queen,"
a wolf snarled. Malumclaw began shifting his weight on his front paws. He was intimidated, and he didn't like it.
"You've got a lot of nerve approaching my pack," he said. "I should have one of my wolves rip your throat out."
"I dare you," the evil queen said.
There wasn't an ounce of fear in her body. She walked closer to them, and the wolves cowered back, Malumclaw included.
"What do you want from us?"
he demanded.
"I've come to make a deal," she said.
"We don't make deals,"
Malumclaw growled.
"You will once you know what I have to offer," the evil queen said.
This intrigued the wolf.
"What kind of deal?"
he asked.
"A trade," the evil queen said. "There are two children traveling through the kingdoms, one boy and one girl. Twins. I want you to find them and bring them to me unscathed."
"You want children?"
Malumclaw mocked.
"They have something. Several things, actually, that I need," the evil queen said. "I would do it myself, but I'm indisposed at the moment."
"And if we bring them to you, what will you give us in return?"
he asked.
"When you bring them to me, I shall give you the one thing you want more than anything else in the world," the evil queen said.
Malumclaw laughed.
"Wolves want for nothing," he said.
The evil queen stared at him as if she were looking into his soul.
"Is that so?"
she asked.
"Then why do you and your pack crusade around the lands, terrorizing everything in your path? What are you trying to prove? Whose revenge are you seeking?"
Malumclaw was silent. He couldn't deny it.
I will give you the one thing that will avenge your father's death wholly, the Evil Queen said. I will give you Queen Red Riding Hood in exchange for the twins. All the wolves, including Malamquah, growled their doubts, but the idea was intriguing to him.
And how could you possibly do that?
He said. The Evil Queen looked at him so sternly that his heart began to race.
Do not question me. I will have the young queen in my possession by the end of the week. Bring me the children, and I will hand her over to you. Do we have a deal or not?
Malamquah looked at the frightened members of his pack. They nodded at him. They didn't want to upset the queen.
Deal, Malamquah said. But let me warn you, if you fail to keep your end of the bargain, we'll snap your neck like a twig.
The evil queen walked up to the wolf and stood inches from his face, looking him forcefully in the eye.
Let me warn you, she said. Fail to keep your part, and I'll have you turned into rugs, just as Red Riding Hood did to your father. And if you ever threaten me again, I'll skin you myself.
Malamquah froze. The Evil Queen knew she had him exactly where she wanted him.
See you soon, she said.
She put her hood back over her head and disappeared into the trees in the direction she had come from. All the wolves stood still for a moment, afraid to move.
What are we waiting for?
Malamquah shouted, his pride bruised.
We have twins to find.
They charged into the horizon, howling in unison. The sound was deafening. Chapter 14, The Sleeping Kingdom. Trix insisted that Alex and Connor stay with her the night after her trial. Of course, that meant the twins slept on the ground underneath her birdhouse-sized home hanging from a tree branch, but it was a kind gesture nonetheless. Alex and Connor couldn't sleep after seeing the walking fish in person. They laid under the stars of the fairy kingdom, most of which were actually just fairies sleeping in midair, and let their thoughts wander.
I always thought that the walking fish was one of Dad's stories, one he made up himself, Alex said. I wonder how he heard it.
Probably the same way he heard about all the other stories that come from this place, Connor said.
But then, why wasn't it as well known as Cinderella's or Snow White's stories? Why wasn't it written in the land of stories?
Alex said, and then asked a question that had been on her mind for a while.
Do you think Dad or Grandma were ever here? Do you think that they ever traveled into the land of stories and just never told us?
Connor had to think about it. The idea had crossed his mind once or twice before, considering that the land of stories had been in their grandma and dad's possession before their grandma had passed it on. Could they just as easily have been transported into this world as Alex and Connor had? And if they had, how did their dad and grandma manage to find a way home?
I don't think so, Connor ultimately decided. They loved fairy tales so much. If they ever got here and saw everything we've seen, I doubt they would have left.
The next morning, Trix generously thanked them again and again, and after they shared goodbyes, the twins started their journey into the next kingdom.
Sleeping Kingdom, here we come, Alex said.
Why do I have a feeling that the spindle is going to be the most difficult item to collect? Connor said.
Alex opened the journal to see if her brother's prediction was true.
The spindle that pricked Sleeping Beauty's finger was the easiest item for me to collect. I had no prior plan of acquiring it, and simply pleaded my case to the queen, and she was very sympathetic. She let me take the spindle on the condition that I would return it to her once I was finished using it. Queen Sleeping Beauty is very wise, especially for someone who had been asleep for a century, and I believe she knew more about what I was after than she was willing to admit.
Well, that's lucky, Connor said. I wonder what sleeping for 100 years does to you. Every morning when I wake up for school, after about the fourth or fifth time I hit the snooze button, I always think I could sleep for 100 years. I wonder if you'd wake up super refreshed, or if you'd be drowsy afterward.
That's an interesting thought, Alex said. I wonder if she dreamed about anything. I assume it would have been a very long dream.
The twins had no money left, but, claiming to have been separated from their parents, they managed to convince two drivers, transporting a cart of goats, to let them ride along into the Sleeping Kingdom. The twins didn't mind sitting in the back with the goats, but the goats weren't thrilled about sharing with the twins.
What are you looking at? Connor said to one of them, after it had stared at him for a good half hour.
The road ran alongside a great sparkling ocean with water that was as blue as the sky. It was like an ocean from their world, except 1,000 times more vibrant.
Look how beautiful the ocean is here, Alex said,
And look over there. It's Mermaid Bay. She was referring to a large bay just ahead that curved into the shoreline. It's pretty neat to know that, right now, as we sit in this cart, there are actual mermaids swimming down there, Alex said.
Yeah, Connor said. Too bad we didn't bring any snorkel gear.
Alex was slipping through the journal, making a list in her head. We have 5 items collected, she said. All we need are the spindle, jewels from Snow White's coffin, and the saber from the deepest sea.
Whatever that might be, Connor said.
Alex longingly stared out at the water. What could the saber from the deepest sea be? With all her fairy tale knowledge, she still couldn't figure it out, and it was starting to get to her. She's hoping that any minute it would just appear in the middle of the ocean.
We'll figure it out, Connor said. Or I should say, you'll figure it out, and I'll pretend I helped.
After they had been on the road a bit, the twins couldn't help but eavesdrop on the conversation the drivers were having.
Did you hear about the news from the Charming Kingdom? One of the drivers asked the other.
No, he said.
Both of Queen Cinderella's glass slippers have been stolen, the driver said.
Stolen? By who?
I don't know, but I reckon there's a reward for anyone with information, he said.
The twins didn't know how to react to this news. If the kingdom was claiming the slippers had been stolen, had Cinderella or Sir Lambton not put the slipper in their bag? Was there a warrant out for their arrest? And then, the most troubling question of all, if they had one of the slippers, who had the other one?
Both were stolen? Alex whispered to her brother.
It has to be that woman we saw in Red Riding Hood's castle, Connor said. She must be collecting for the wishing spell, too. I knew it.
Let's just hope we get to the spindle before she does, Alex said.
The road turned away from the ocean, and the cart headed north into the Sleeping Kingdom. It was a very hilly place, surrounded by towering mountain ranges. It was a surprisingly dismal land, although the twins weren't sure what they had expected. All the fields were dry, and all the trees were bare. Everything seemed like it hadn't been alive for a very long time.
Why is everything dead? Connor asked.
I don't think they're dead, Alex said. I think they're sleeping.
Sleeping Beauty's castle was located in the center of a village called Sleepy Valley, and once the twins arrived there and hopped off the cart, they understood how it had gotten its name. The entire village surrounding the castle looked deserted. The twins found a man standing behind the open window of a bakery. He was resting his head on his hand and his elbow on the windowsill. He was sleeping standing up.
Excuse me, Alex said, not wanting to be rude and wake him up.
Yes,
the man asked, with his eyes still closed.
Where is everyone? Alex asked.
Resting,
the man said with a yawn, and then began to snore. Sure enough, as the twins walked through the village, they could see many other shopkeepers and servants drowsily moving about inside the shops, slowly getting their work done. They all looked as if they were about to fall asleep at any second.
I thought the curse on the kingdom had been broken, Connor said.
They don't seem to be sleeping because they have to. It looks like they're sleeping because they want to, Alex said.
Alex and Connor walked through the sluggish town and found Sleeping Beauty's castle. The castle was a spectacular sight. It was the tallest structure the twins had ever seen. It was made from peach-colored stones, and its many tall towers soared into the sky with the tallest in the very center. When the twins looked closely, they saw the residue left from the vines that had once grown up the castle walls. There were many vast gardens surrounding the castle, or at least there would have been if anything were alive. Gardeners slept in the garden, still clasping their tools. Every few minutes they would wake up and continue working, but they would fall back asleep almost immediately. There were guards everywhere, but the twins effortlessly walked past them. Every once in a while, a guard would open an eye and consider saying something to them, but then decided to go back to sleep instead. They found the main entrance to the castle and entered. They walked down a long hall with a soaring ceiling that led to the throne room. It had white pillars and a checkered floor. The ceiling was painted the colors of dusk, with vivid pinks and oranges. Guards lined the entire room, and they were all entirely unconscious. Sitting on the throne ahead of them was a beautiful woman. She was speaking with 2 men. One was tall and handsome, and the other was short and old with a white beard. The woman wore a tiara made of silver flowers and had long, flowing, golden hair. She wore a thin gown, a shade of pale rose, with matching gloves. The twins knew without a doubt that it was Sleeping Beauty. She was speaking with a royal advisor and her husband, King Chase.
She looked troubled and in a state of deep contemplation. She was tired, too, like the twins' mother looked when there was a lot on her mind.
"Perhaps we should enforce a law. No sleeping permitted during the day," the advisor said.
"Absolutely not," Sleeping Beauty said. "I will not force something so oppressive on my people. Let us not forget that this isn't their fault."
"The curse is over, Your Highness," the advisor said. "It's time for the kingdom to wake up and see that."
"As far as I'm concerned, the curse is upon us until the day this kingdom is in the exact condition it was before the spell was cast," Sleeping Beauty said. "I may be awake, but being asleep for 100 years has taken a toll on them. They shouldn't be punished or held accountable for any of this."
"Darling, you may have no choice,"
King Chase said, taking her hand in his.
"The kingdom is falling apart. There are no crops being grown or business being done."
"Let me think about this," she said, and let out a long sigh.
"May I make a suggestion?" Connor said, walking toward the trio. He took them by surprise. They didn't know anyone else in the room was conscious. Alex was a little scared. She had no idea what her brother was about to say. She hoped his speech in the Fairy Kingdom hadn't given him a big head.
"Who are you?"
the advisor asked. "I'm Connor, and this is my sister Alex," he said. Alex awkwardly waved from behind him.
"You have a lovely castle," she said.
"How did you get in here?" King Chase asked.
"Seriously?" Connor asked him, gesturing to the sleeping guards behind him. "This isn't exactly Fort Knox."
"They don't know what that is, Connor," Alex whispered.
"Young man," the advisor said,
"with all due respect, this is a very important matter we're discussing, and we've been trying to find a solution for years, and still haven't come up with anything that doesn't take away basic human freedoms,"
Sleeping Beauty said.
"So, if this young man thinks he has an answer, I say we let him speak."
The men didn't argue with her. Connor had the floor.
"Have any of you ever heard of coffee before?" Connor asked. They stared blankly at him. "Never mind. I've been told it stunts your growth anyway," he said. "I fall asleep a lot in school. It's not my fault. My brain just turns off when it gets bored. A trick I discovered, when I remember to use it, is to wear a rubber band around my wrist and snap it right when I feel myself drifting off to sleep. The sting keeps me conscious for a good 5 minutes guaranteed."
They were puzzled by his proposal.
"Look, it isn't a rocket science solution, but it works," Connor said. "And your people could do it to themselves, so you wouldn't be forcing them into anything. And maybe if they did it enough, they eventually wouldn't need to anymore."
They still needed convincing. Connor turned to Alex for help.
"Alex, do you have any rubber bands on you?"
Connor asked.
"I may have some hair ties in my bag," Alex said.
She put her bag on the floor and searched through it, accidentally knocking the glass slipper out onto the floor. The clank echoed through the throne room. The twins panicked. It was as if time had frozen. Sleeping Beauty, her husband, and the advisor grew very tense.
"How did you get that?" Sleeping Beauty asked.
"It's Queen Cinderella's glass slipper," the advisor said.
"No, it's not what you think," Alex said, quickly putting it back into her bag.
"We didn't steal it," Connor said. "Guards!" King Chase shouted.
A few guards from behind the twins suddenly awoke and became alert.
"Seize them!"
the king shouted.
"Here we go again!" Connor said as the guards sprinted toward them. He grabbed Alex's wrist and pulled her into a run.
"Your Majesty," Alex pleaded to Sleeping Beauty, "we've come to borrow your spindle. We're collecting objects for the wishing spell."
Sleeping Beauty stood, about to speak, but the twins couldn't wait around to hear what she had to say. They were running around the throne room in circles, barely missing the extended hands of guards trying to grab hold of them. Alex and Connor ran through a set of open doors leading out of the throne room. They had no idea where they were going, but they knew they had to move. They had been through too much to let the guards catch them this time.
"I'm so tired of being chased," Connor yelled.
They ran down hallway after hallway, making sharp turns whenever they could to throw off the guards. They were moving so fast that the beautiful architecture and artwork of the castle was nothing but a blur. Suddenly, the hallway they were in came to a dead end.
"Now what are we going to do?"
Alex asked.
"Quick, in here,"
Connor said, and pulled her through the closest set of open doors. They found a stone staircase on the other side and ran up it. It spiraled higher and higher, and the twins wondered if it would ever end. They were climbing to an impossible height. They must have been headed to the tallest tower in the castle.
They reached the very top of the stairs and found a big, black door. They rushed through it and immediately locked it from the other side.